So what's your favorite?
How did you go?
If there's an answer, they're gonna find it. I think you'll have a great time here. I think you'll have a great time here.
So, hello again and welcome to another episode of Quick Question with Soren and Daniel, the podcast where two best friends and comedy writers ask each other questions and give each other answers. I am one half of that podcast, senior writer for Last Week Tonight, author of How to Fight Presidents, and surprisingly hoarse guy because he's been chanting and protesting all day, Daniel O'Brien, joined as always by my co-host and striking brother in solidarity, Soren Bowie. Soren, what do we want?
Fair pay.
Oh, over here it's contracts.
Oh, that's fine. Yeah. I think generally you get whoever's got the megaphone is going to be like, hey, here's what we're going to say.
Yeah.
And we're going to say like, who's got the power? Union's got the power or whatever it is. And like, what do we want? Fair contracts. When do we want them? Now. Or yeah. What do we want? Fair pay. When do we want them? Now. So they give you like a little bit of leeway. Like they'll let you know beforehand. So you're not just caught unawares.
Yeah. So for listeners who don't know, Soren and I are part of the Writers Guild of America, and we are on strike right now until the studios give us our fair contracts. So we've both been out in the streets protesting, and I was doing that this morning, and it is shockingly exhausting to walk around in a circle for 4 hours screaming and chanting and hooting when like people honk their horns at us.
Boots on the ground every day. I'm in the shit, man.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm taking fire. Hypothetically, like figuratively taking fire, writing some things on signs every single day, like just going in without anything in mind and just being like, what do I want to say today?
Yeah.
And putting it on a sign. So obviously I'm getting pretty famous for that.
That's cool.
And, I've been picketing pretty much every day. I'll be honest with you, Dan. I don't always do the 4 hours. I'm going to say that publicly.
No,
sometimes I do like 3.5. Sometimes I do 3.
I mean, it's a marathon, not a sprint. And like most marathons, it would be better if you could tag out every once in a while and knowing that someone else is going to fill your spot for a second. And that's sort of what the union has been doing. Because I don't live in New York or LA where the bulk of these protests are happening, I don't go every day, but I've been going once a week, every week of this strike, traveling into New York to do them. And even that is exhausting. I don't scream often. I don't like chant and hoot and holler. So when I do it, it's like being on a trampoline for the first time in years. You're just using different parts of your body that aren't used to being used in such a way. And it really wipes me out.
It is surprising. It's surprising how much, because you run every single day.
Yeah.
But then you're going to spend 4 hours of walking. And the next day your body's like, oh no, we weren't used to that. That hurts. And you're like, well, it's so close. Like it's like it's running light. I was just doing the same motions, but slower.
Yeah.
And your body's like, nah, it's different. It's different.
Thanks to our new sponsor, Maeve, for supporting our podcast. Dogs need unprocessed, high protein, low carb diets that kibble and fresh food don't deliver. Make the switch to raw today. Right now, Maeve is offering $40 off your first order at meetmaeve.com/QQ. Has anyone in any of your protests, have strangers who are not protesting been antagonistic towards you guys?
A few. Yeah.
Wow. Today was my first time of that because we've had,
what did you get?
It was so bizarre that it's like kind of silly because like the protests that I've been to so far have been like very inspiring and uplifting to see all the support within our union and other unions, but also just like people in New York who read the signs and know what's going on and they clap for us or give us a thumbs up or like cars honking. Everyone in general, if you're walking around with signs that are like, CEOs have too much money and other people should have more money. Almost everyone in the world except CEOs is like, yeah, I agree with that. That's true of my job too. I'm on your side. And today, there was one guy who was just standing off to the side of our protest, and he didn't seem like he was unwell or anything like that. He had his hair was cut. He had a nice button-down shirt tucked into slacks with a belt. Soren, forgive me, I didn't get to see his shoes. I know that's a big tell for you, but I didn't think to look at them. And he had a rolling, like professional rolling suitcase kind of thing. Like he's George Clooney and Up in the Air, and he knows how to travel in airports like a professional. And nice. He was reading our signs and looking at us, and then he was just like, no one likes your shows. Your shows suck. You don't deserve any money. Your shows are bad. And I didn't want to engage with him, but I kind of wanted to. I almost wanted to stop and be like, because this is, listeners, it's not like a localized last week tonight protest. It's not even like these are the striking writers affiliated with HBO or Max or Warner Brothers Discovery. We're just broadly all writers for television and movies. And there's no sign that symbolizes like what anyone works on beyond like creating content. And he's like, yeah. Your shows suck. Nobody watches them. And we're like, what do you mean? Surely there must be a show you watch and like.
That's kind of cool that he came to just heckle you guys.
Yeah.
Heckle the idea of writers.
Yeah. On the grounds that television is bad now, full stop.
Right. And then I'm curious, like, well, when was it good? Tell me the shows you liked. Because a lot of those people are probably out here still. That's fascinating. Yeah, there have been a couple of where I've been like, if I could just listen to them talk about what they actually think, it would be great without having to actually interact with them. Mm-hmm. Like if I could hear somebody else talk to them, I'd be into it. But there's no way I'm engaging them. We've had some people that drove by that are like, pussies! And we're like, whoa. What is that agenda?
I mean, that's a fundamental misunderstanding of your audience as a heckler, where it's like, oh, you're going to call a crowd of writers pussies? What, you think this is the first time?
Yeah. And by the way, they've all called themselves way worse than that. We had a guy stop us and he said, what are you protesting? We said, that's not a protest. It's a strike. This is for writers in the industry. And he's like, okay, well, what are you doing for the thousands of vets that are on the street right now? And we're like, you know, nothing.
Jesus.
Right here. Like, that's not our... Surely, I mean, that's obviously a big problem too.
Yeah.
But we're allowed to focus on more than one thing. Mm-hmm. And then there was a guy once that had a camera on his chest. He had like a GoPro on his chest and was standing off to the side, like wasn't getting in the mix and clearly was doing this for his channel or whatever, but also a little timid and didn't quite want to actually interact with anybody. So he's just sort of like mumble shouting stuff at us. And it's stuff like, as I would pass him, I'd hear him say stuff like, you guys don't care about these blood-sucking corporate assholes. You just want your cut of it. And like, you think that this is going to fix anything? You guys think you're safe from AI? Like, kind of like taunting writers. Yeah. He had like a good understanding maybe of like what it was, but then was like, his issue, I think, was with capitalism in general.
Yeah.
I don't know how to be like, yeah, man, that's a problem too. We've got a vet guy and you, and like, you're all right. Every single one of you is right.
Right.
But also, I have to eat food.
Yeah.
Continue to live in this world.
It's a very frustrating part of, it feels like a very modern problem of public social discourse. I might be wrong about that, but a very frustrating thing that if you stand and loudly declare a problem that you're trying to fix, someone's response to that without addressing the merits of your platform, their thing is, well, let me bring up another problem that is also bad. And yeah. As a way of shutting down the conversation. And I don't know if that's new or not. It feels new. And it's also, I almost always agree with those people. We just happen to be in a position where our platform can focus on this specific issue, which expands beyond our industry. And, you know, it's like anytime there's completely shifting gears, this comes up with women's rights and men's rights all the time, where we'll talk about pay being worse across the board for women compared to men for doing the same job and the same amount of work. And then men will be like, but more men die in the wars. And I'm like, Yeah, that sucks too. I like, show me where you're protesting that, and I'll go to that when this is done. But like, I can't grab a sign and parade around in front of Warner Brothers, Amazon, WB, Discovery, Halliburton, whatever I work for now, this giant mega media company. I can't walk around with a sign and say, writers deserve fair pay. And also, there should be paid maternity leave for 6 months. And also, veterans should have jobs in tech. And also, tech should be controlled. And also, homelessness should end. And there's probably stuff going on in Turkey that I should be aware about. And I think we should fix that too. Like, no one could protest with every issue going on in the world at once. And like, we don't have an objective way to measure what is the most important issue that we can all get behind right now. Yes. So in the meantime, everyone should use their influence to advance their communities and their workplaces, their unions' agendas. And if we all do that in good faith, we will hopefully collectively make the world better.
Yeah, you'd think so. they don't think so.
No.
We've also got some people on the other end of the spectrum, which is I haven't been in the line of fire of one of these, but there's a guy that comes to ours at the Sony lot. And he is, he's in kind of like a wheelchair, but he also has a cane. So he can stand some, but he usually rides around in his wheelchair. And what he'll do is he will ask somebody to hold his cane for a second. And then that person who's holding his cane is beholden to him. Like, now they've got something of his and he's not taking it back. And he now wants to talk about, he has these crazy stories, all these crazy stories in his life. And you know, the problem is he just doesn't have somebody to write it.
Yeah.
So he's like out there to network, to like open some doors for himself. And so that one's rough. That's like the people who are there to, we ran into a kid who was in college who was like more interested in special effects and everything. But as he's talking to us, he's talking to us as though we are staffed and work for the WGA, not like a clear understanding of what the WGA is. And think, for anyone listening, that's the Writers Guild of America. That's the guild that we belong to. But he's just like, you belong to that. You work for that. Like, how did you get into the WGA? How long have you worked for them? And we're like, no, well, it doesn't really work like that. And then one of the guys that I was with was like, no, I work on Family Guy. And he was like, what? You work on Family? Like, he bewildered. And he was like, I love Family Guy.
Right.
Hold on. What's your name? And then he takes the guy, my friend who I'm walking with, gets his name. And then right in front of him, IMDb's him. And I was like, this can't happen. you can't be doing this.
That's such a funny idea to me that like this person compartmentalizes and understands the idea that like Family Guy has writers, The Simpsons has writers, Friends had writers, and the Writers Guild is just a collection of writers, period. Just like just an office full of writers just shuffling papers around and like really stressed out handing sheets of paper to each other.
Yeah. I think he went home like so excited that, oh, the Writers Guild is full of writers who are writing. it's been a mix of people that I've encountered so far.
Yeah.
Right. On the whole, most people are like, anyone driving by is just like honking and loving it and being like, I'm also getting fucked. And you're like, yes, we're all on the same team.
Yeah, just honking and shouting something at us. And I'm just like, I didn't hear everything that you said, but one of those words was nurses. You're right. You're underpaid and undervalued. My mom was a nurse. I'm with you.
We walk past we do laps around the Sony lot because the Sony lot's huge. And there's three different gates. And we'll kind of like meander from one gate to another and then chant there for a while, walk around there. And then if the vibe's no good, we'll go to the next one. And as we're doing that, there's one block that we walk along where there's construction happening on their side of the road. And those construction workers are like our biggest advocates. Those guys are so rad. Every single time we go by, they all stop and just like whistle and cheer. And I'm like, feel very heroic.
Yeah. We, today's protest was right outside of Madison Square Garden, but we only had, I'm so bad with distances. We're on 7th in New York outside of Madison and Penn Station. And we are just like penned in the line. We certainly didn't take up, we weren't allowed to take up a full block. I could make one lap of our sanctioned protest circle in under 20 seconds walking.
Wow.
So we were just walking this same very small circle for 4 hours this morning. And you're seeing a lot of the same people, especially it's New York, so traffic's not moving. So you're really just getting to know the same cars as you're walking by doing your chants and banging on your sign.
Yeah. So it's different here. Like you get a lot of turnover in cars. And then also there's like a lot of Amazon, their studios are also very close. So you can actually walk from Sony to Amazon. So anywhere you're not feeling it, there's always a new place to go to. There is a lot of, you're just crossing, when you go to a gate, you're just crossing that one stretch of road where you're like back and forth at a light until the light turns and then you're waiting on a corner and then you're doing it again. And that for 4 hours seems like I would go absolutely insane. Like I have to be able to move from gate to gate or I would go crazy.
I used to feed Jackson kibble every single day. Jackson is my dog, not a friend of mine. And I would feed him kibble every single day, morning and dinner time with a little bit of warm water mixed in there. And it was fine. But now I've switched to Maeve and he is happier and healthier. And it's good because you know a dog eating kibble every day is like a human consuming a diet of 100% processed foods. No matter your species, fillers, additives, and synthetics are not optimal sources of nutrition. Enter Maeve Raw Food for Dogs, formulated by PhD veterinary nutritionists with real human-grade ingredients you can name just by looking. I see carrots. I see peas. Plus, it's bite-sized and ready for your dog to eat right out of the bag. No mess, no prep. Just open, pour, and enjoy. If you're like me, you want the best for your dog. I want the best for Jackson, and the best for Jackson is Maeve. He loves it. He loves the fresh crunch right out of the freezer because you can keep it in the freezer. You don't need to defrost it or thaw it or anything. And he likes gnawing on this frozen, fresh, real food from Maeve. My dog, like your dog, is biologically primed to digest and absorb key nutrients from an unprocessed, low-carb, high-protein, raw meat diet. And Maeve's raw food diet is formulated to meet your dog's needs. I was skeptical about Max at first because Jackson, my dog, is a picky eater. He won't eat just anything. And a lot of things, well, that's not true. He will eat anything, just not a lot of things agree with him. So I slowly tapered him off his kibble and onto Maeve, and he loved it. No issues with his digestion, no issues with his energy or his coat. He loved it. And he's the best and he's very happy eating it. He asks me every day, he wakes me up and he says, disculpe me, papá, necesito Maeve, por favor, necesito Maeve, ahora, ahorita. And I say, and as always, I tell him, I don't understand what you're saying, but I heard Maeve. Maeve is the bridge between our two languages. So yes, son, I will bring you Maeve. The ad copy asked me to say who should try Maeve. I'm going to say it. Everyone should try Maeve because we love it. And you can get $40 off your first order at meetmaev.com/QQ. Dogs need unprocessed, high-protein, low-carb diets that kibble and fresh foods don't deliver. Maeve supports benefits you can smell, feel, and see, from better breath and reduced itching and shedding to regular bowel movements and maintaining a healthy weight. Jackson is the healthiest he's ever been. His bowel movements, I don't want to get into it too much, but they're great. They're top-notch, grade A, three thumbs up. Plus, there's no mess, there's no prep, there's no thawing. Just open, pour, and serve. It's that easy. Who else can say they get to eat all their favorite foods every single day? No one. Just Jackson. Make the switch to Raw today. Right now, Maeve is offering $40 off your first order at meetmaeve.com/QQ. Go to meetmaeve.com/QQ. That's MEETMAEV to receive $40 off your first order. Do it! How have you been dealing generally with a strike otherwise? I don't know if you... It was touched on briefly in last week's episode. Did you listen to it at all? I would be shocked if you did.
No, I have not heard.
Yeah, of course. Not of course, like, you're a jerk. Of course, like neither of us listen to this show. But we, Michael, Abe, and I touched briefly on it, that it's like, it's very inspiring to be out there. And also, like, we are the writers are clearly ahead on the PR war of this.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
social media is like loudly on our side, and it's cool to see celebrities out. Like, all of it is very fun and inspiring. But like, the at the end of the day, it's like the studios have not come back to the table and have not asked us back to the table. And it's been like demoralizing that they that like writing is so quickly discarded or being used as a negotiating tool. And it's been on my end certainly difficult to hear and feel and intuit. And it's one of those things where I want to be like, no. As writers, we've been like self-deprecating for our entire lives, because that's like, that's fun and that's a running joke. Writers are stupid. Blah, who cares about writers? But like, you do need us, right? We all just stopped working, and you don't seem to care. And like, I don't know. It's hard to not hear that about the thing that I've dedicated my life to.
Well, yeah. I mean, you're hearing silence. But
yeah.
That silence, it does seem to suggest like disinterest, but yeah, it's not the case, I don't think. I think
no,
this is like...
It does feel like purely negotiating, and like there's some business way where proto Jack Welch's have figured out if they wait a certain amount of time, they could turn one number into a larger number. And in the meantime, they could take the hit of not having new writing generated for however many months their business algorithm has told them is acceptable.
It's crazy. It's crazy when you like really drill down into the numbers of it, which I'm terrible at numbers. I'm so bad at anything that has to do with numbers. But fortunately, there's some like articles and stuff that have really broken it down for me, and the negotiating committee of the WGA has as well, and like how much money these studios are losing because of this, and losing hypothetically, obviously, because some of them are just black boxes that you can't actually see into it. But the amount of money that this is costing them, and it was costing their stock and stuff like that, it's so big already in comparison to what the writers were asking for, like so much beyond what the writers were already asking for, that it is just it's like a child that like doesn't want to lose.
Yeah.
Like is just angry and doesn't want to be powerless in the situation. And so will hold out as long as they can to be like, no, I'm going to hurt you in any way that I can. And that's kind of what the studios are doing right now. They can't win. They just can't, because everybody is on board. They didn't anticipate how many people would be behind the writers in this.
Yeah. And I think they probably did anticipate it. I think they knew from the beginning. This is, I know nothing. I don't know shit about fuck. This is conjecture. But they probably knew from the beginning, eventually we will reach a deal. And they have a bottom floor for the deal that they would do that would make sense for them. And they're just not even bothering to present it to us, which is the insane thing to me, where it's just like, you know, why are we doing this? Why are you making us all shout in the streets? Why are all of your reputations taking a hit? You know that people are going to continue to want White Lotus and Bridgerton and Grey's Anatomy and to a lesser extent Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. You know that people are going to continue to want these things, and we're not going to have a world where we don't have them and we don't have writers working. So just like, why does this have to take months?
Part of it is that they are, so all the other contracts that are up are SAG, so the Screen Actors Guild, and then also the Directors Guild, is their contract is up. So I think what they're going to try and do is when those renegotiate in June, or one of them starts in June, maybe one of them starts in July, I can't remember, they will hope that the deals that they cut with SAG and the WGA will undercut with the writers. Like, be like, look, we can make deals with them. We're not unreasonable. We're making great deals, and like, we're giving up a lot. But the issue, and I think that maybe like for people who don't understand what's going on, that might make sense. But for anyone who does, the Writers Guilds, that their issues are so specific to writers.
Yeah.
That it doesn't matter what happens with SAG or the DGA. And I think that when they realize that, after those deals are done, they will be like, okay, now we'll deal with the writers. But that won't be for months.
Yeah.
It's really frustrating, though. It's frustrating that we were mid-season. It's frustrating, and frustrating for, it's a good problem to have in that I'm on a good show. I love my job. I make pretty good money at my job. The problems that the Writers Guild is running into are not problems that I have on my show. And still we're going to, in solidarity, we will leave our show, because if what's good for the goose is good for the gander, you know, it's like good for all of us. And it helps the future generations of writers. And that's just how guilds work.
Right. You have to, because like I also love my job and I've made a living doing it, and I'm very lucky that way. And I didn't want to strike. No writer that I knew wanted to strike. We all like working, and we all know how incredibly privileged we are to be in this industry. We just wanted a fair deal. But mostly we're striking because, like, the reason that I have a livable wage now and the reason that I have health insurance now is because decades ago, the Writers Guild struck when it was inconvenient for them, so I could have this life that I have now. So we are striking today so future writers can have a shot at a better life, and, or not even like a better life. Like, we're hoping for them to exceed what we've got. We just want to make sure they can keep up and live a fair life.
Yeah. Like they can have writing as a job that where they don't have to also hold down another job just to do it.
Yeah.
Which is sort of what it's turning into. Anyway. Yeah. It feels very good every single time I'm out there. I'm out there with the exception of, I went to Colorado for a couple of days. I'm out there every day, sometimes morning, sometimes afternoon. And it's just like, it actually makes me feel better. I would feel like a kind of a piece of shit if I just wasn't working at all and also not doing anything at all. And I was just at home, just like waiting it out. It feels like every single day I know what I'm building my day around, and it's this strike. And so now I'm going to head out there. I did, however, Dan. Mm. I think I want to talk about this right now.
Okay.
I did, however, on my way one day to the strike, endo off the front of my bike. I was headed out to the picket lines and clipped a curb with my pedal, and then my tire immediately went into the curb and I went over the front of my handlebars. My bike landed on top of me, and there was a woman driving behind me and another guy that was like waiting in his car to like load some furniture. He immediately, as I was on the ground, was like, "Are you okay? Do you want me to call 911? Because I guess it was a pretty bad crash."
Yeah.
I said no while I was laying on the ground, but also laying on the ground. I wasn't like immediately getting up because I needed a second.
Yeah.
I was like, that hurt that much.
Right. And like, first, well, sir, thank you. First, I need to just quickly confirm that I am alive. Because I'm not positive yet. I have to reach up to my head to see if I can feel brain coming out.
Yeah.
Or like, so, I need to look over and see if my heart's on the ground over there.
The spill that I took was end over end. So end over the front, came down on my right arm and then rolled to the shoulder and then head, and kind of slid on the pavement for a little while on my shoulder and head with the bike on top of me.
Yeah.
And this woman who was driving behind me, as I got up and like turned my bike over to put the chain back on and stuff, she drove up next to me and she was crying. And she said she thought she had witnessed a death.
Jesus.
And I was like, no, I'm okay. And I was like checking myself. I had some gravel in my palm, and my knees were a little like bloodied. And then my helmet. My shoulder, I ruined my shirt. Like, it was just torn open, but there wasn't too much underneath it. Like, the shirt kind of protected me. And then my helmet has like a nice, it really got shaved off in one section. I wouldn't have like had a huge impact on my head, I don't think, but I would have probably scalped myself without it. So it really did protect me. I got up, felt like shit, went back home, showered really quickly and washed it all off. And then went to the picket lines thinking, wow, I came out of that pretty unscathed. That was incredible. And then throughout the day, my wrist started to hurt more and more and started to swell. And I was like, I should probably go get this checked out. And turned out I broke my wrist.
Damn it. Are you in a cast now?
Yes, but I want to talk to you about it. But yes, go on, because you've been in a very similar situation.
Almost exactly like when I fell off my bike and broke my wrist back in 2018. It was very, very going downhill. I didn't hit the curb, but like a car swerved and spooked me, and I fell over the front of my bike. And it's it's very interesting to me that you have such a clear idea of what happened, because I really felt like I'm doing CSI because I can certainly remember, oh no, I'm falling, this is bad. And then I didn't black out or anything like that. Like, I didn't lose consciousness, but it's such a blur. And then the next thing you know, you're like standing on the curb. I'm like, well, my bike is there, but it used to be below and behind me, and now it's way ahead of me and upside down. So that probably went over me. My wrist is hurting like shit. There's scrapes on this hand. There's scrapes on my neck here. All right. I'm no closer to knowing exactly what happened here. Why am I injured on the top of my left head and the back of my right knee? How did this come to
me? I mean, there is some of that. I have like gravel in the palm of my hand, but also on the back of that hand. So I'm like, the like, it's like a magic bullet situation where I'm like, how did I get both sides? Did it go through? So for the most part, like, I have a pretty good memory of everything that happened. Also, my backpack helped a lot. I was wearing that, and when I flipped over onto that shoulder, the strap protected me, and I can tell because it's also pretty fucked up. And so I came out like thinking, this is great. And to this, I still do think that a lot. Like, there's, it could have been way, way worse than it was, given how fast I was going and how I fell. But this wrist situation was like, do you remember the name of the bone that you broke?
Radial.
Okay.
No,
I broke one that's in that called the navicula or the scaphoid.
Okay.
Which is kind of like by the thumb. People break it when they're in fights and they don't put their thumb in, mm-hmm. like their fist fights, or also on ski poles. I guess it's a really common one. But what it means is that I can't move my thumb has to be completely immobilized in addition to the wrist, so that I can't pinch my index finger or any of my fingers to my thumb. Which means that the hand is like, I just can't use it.
Yeah.
There's
so many fucking bones in there. And when I broke my wrist on a similar accident, I know I'd never broken a bone before, like a serious bone before. And I knew so little that, like, when I got up from the accident and strangers were like, holy shit, are you okay? Because the same as that woman and the guy moving furniture, people saw this and were like, oh, this isn't just a tumble off a bike. I saw something real bad here. Yeah. And I knew that the most pain was in my wrist. And so my first thought was, is my wrist broken? And then I moved all of my fingers individually and they all moved. So I was like, no, I'm fine. Must just be like a sprain or whatever. Would a guy with a broken wrist be able to give you a thumbs up right now?
That's almost exactly what I did where I was like, full mobility. And then I started like move my wrist around and I was like, that looks about right.
Yeah.
Like that, surely this is like, if I wouldn't be able to do all these like little, like make it limp, turn it back. Like, how could I do all of that if it was broken?
And I hold my wrists up and I look at them and I'm like, do they look different? I mean, maybe they always did. I don't know. I never look at those guys.
Yeah. And then slowly it starts to swell like the size of a baseball. And you're like, okay. So maybe that's not great.
Let me ask how long, because I had I was on my way to church when I fell off my bike. And after church, I was going to go to brunch with my friends. And I still thought, well, this definitely hurts. And like, I'm bloody, but I hate deviating from a plan. So let me just go to church and like, I could sit and think for a while. And then let me just go to brunch and ask my friends what they think. And then maybe I'll see a doctor tomorrow. But I didn't make it to the end of the block. It was within 2 minutes of deciding that plan. I was like, no, this isn't, I can't continue on the day now. I need to go to the hospital right now. How long between you breaking your wrist and you finding out that you broke your wrist?
It was like 24 hours.
Shit.
Yeah, but it's also a smaller bone. It's a much smaller bone that like you have to really do specific things to really feel it. And when you do, it's like, oh fuck. And I thought maybe, oh, it's just a really bad sprain. And like, it started to blow up. And then that evening I was like, this is not looking right. I'll just sleep on it. And then slept on it the next morning. I was like, okay, something's really wrong here.
I need to say something to our listeners right now. Cause Soren just said the sequence of words. it's a smaller bone. It's such a small bone that you need to do a bunch of different things to it until you can feel it. And then you're like, oh, fuck. Of course we could make jokes right now, but we're on strike. So we're not going to do that. We're absolutely not going to touch that one at all.
We're going to just leave it. We're going to leave it and just watch it disappear in the rear view.
Do you want that joke? Tell Warner Brothers. Tell Paramount.
And by the way, disappearing pretty fast in that rear view. It's so small.
We'll be right back.
I broke it. Then when I went to urgent care and they're like, yeah, you fucking broke it. And I was like, well, you still like doing the negotiation thing where I'm like, but I have children I have to pick up. And they're like, well, don't. And then.
Yeah, it's like, that's just one of the things you won't be able to do now. In addition to like tying your shoes and wiping your ass.
Everything has become like, I didn't realize even right away. It's like, you have to kind of, to get the full context, you just start living these experiences where you're like, well, I won't do this for fucking 6 weeks. Like, yeah, tying shoes has been a real problem.
Yeah.
Brushing teeth left-handed is a nightmare. Shampooing your hair left-handed.
Opening doors drove me crazy.
Driving. Yeah. Trying to reaching over myself just to put it in reverse or drive is like everything. Trying to wash dishes.
Yeah.
I'm doing my daughter's hair. I can't comb and then. Put her hair up in a ponytail. I just can't do it.
It's so funny and relatable that your first thought is like picking up your kids. Cause as I'm talking with the doctor and was like, will I ever be able to play the piano? It's like, buddy, you're going to be really lucky if you could put your glasses on.
Yeah. I can't even imagine living alone because I can't do dishes. I can't lift a pan or like I need two hands. It really fucking struck me when I was trying to, I had a night guard. I took my night guard out in the morning and tried to brush it. I was like, there's no means to do this. So I'm like pinning it down on the table with my elbow and like trying to brush it. Nothing was going right. Also like the original wrap that they put me in had my index finger and my ring finger bound together and splinted as well to like just keep them away from the thumb. And they started to rub together and that started to blister and I was just miserable. And finally the doctor was like, you got to see a hand specialist right away. And I was like, okay. Cause I guess this bone doesn't get great circulation. And when it's broken, you have to have it exactly right or it'll heal wrong. And then you'll be fucked forever. So I was like, well, I can't, I'm going to Colorado and I can't change my trip. He's like, well, you shouldn't go. And I was like, I have to go. And
it's so funny, but just because our stories are very similar, and I don't mean to keep interrupting and talking about me, but it's very funny that like I broke my wrist and was like, okay, but so what's the medical like protocol on getting on a boat? Like, why? What do you mean? Why are you getting on a boat? Well, I had this. I was gonna go to Catalina Island and like. Like hang out, Catalina, maybe scuba, maybe fish. Like, no, you can't do that. Like, no, doctor, you don't understand. It's December 4th. That's the anniversary of when I got laid off from crack. So I always like to do a big special trip on December 4th. So like, as long as all I need you to say is that medically I'm okay to be on a boat. That it doesn't like fuck up with the atmosphere or whatever.
Right. That's exactly the questions I asked. I was like, on a plane, pressure, like that's okay. Yeah. And he's like, I mean, I guess so. And then he was like, you have to go to a hand specialist. And I was like, can I just go to one in Colorado? And he's like, sure. I can't recommend any there. And I was like, that's fine. So I ended up going to a doctor there. He's great. I saw a great orthopedic surgeon there. And he was like, you've got some options. I can just put a screw in it, do some like a quick surgery, put a screw in it, and you know guaranteed that it will heal properly. Or we can put you in a cast. And I was like, what are the cast colors? He was like, no, it's different now. So here's what they do, Dan. Casts are removable for adults. There's a cast that it's like fully plastic. It's got little holes, like vents in it, and then it's got neoprene around it. And they put it in an incubator and get it very hot. And then they slide it over my hand and then they form it specifically to my wrist and hand. Then there's a ratchet system like on ski boots or snowboard boots that you just twist and it tightens up the very end of it. So you can take it off to shower. You can take it off to like wash it. So all the really terrible aspects of having a cast, I'm not dealing with.
Okay. So two things. My wrist, first of all, fuck you. my wrist breaking was in three stages. There was the temporary cast thing that they put on in the emergency room that I thought was my cast forever, but it was not. And then they put on a hard cast like you're thinking of when you're asking, like the Dear Evan Hansen signed my cast. I had an all black, hard, unremovable cast. Then they took that off and did surgery on my wrist. And then they gave me a different cast that was that black heated up thing that they mold directly to your wrist shape. Yeah. But I didn't get ratchets. I got like foam and Velcro. And it was, this is not important, and it shouldn't be important if it's about your rehabilitation and your physical improvement, but it was not sexy. The straps were like thick and soft and bulky. You could still like use them to remove your cast, to shower and do your physical therapy on it and whatever. But while you're wearing it, it really looked like I went to a craft store and bought some foam and made a fake cast for attention and was bad at it.
That's what my first rap looked like. Like it was like such a shitty splint that it was like, what are you doing? What is this little cry for help you're doing? But this thing is like, it looks, oh man, it's very sleek.
Yeah.
I get great when I run with it, by the way, I'm running with it. So, I get no wind resistance from it. And it's got, this ratchet system that's like, it's awesome. It feels just like a normal cast, like it's hard and everything, but I can just pop it off whenever I feel like it. If I'm itchy, I just pop it off. Now I remember in the office at one point, another employee of ours, Bridget, she was itchy with her cast at one point and stuck something in there and lost it, like a knife or something like that in there.
Oh yeah, so that's right.
Immediately,
It was something absurd. It was a pen cap, wasn't it? Something absurd.
Oh, it was
like
a pen.
That?
Yeah, she lost a pen cap in there. She put a pen in there, and then the cap came off.
Yeah.
And so I was like, living for these moments where somebody has a problem and no one can solve it, because I'm like, I want to solve it. I want to be the one. Like, yeah. Let me try. Let me try the puzzle. And so I was like, I got some ideas. Let's do a coat hanger. Like, let's do a butter knife. Like, I had these plans. Very excited. And then as I'm like, slowly like weaving stuff into her cast,
scratching
like
the shit out of her arm.
It's like and it's like a deeply intimate thing to stick something in somebody else's cast, because they're vulnerable, they're injured, and like it's like I was like, I don't think this is right. I don't think we should be doing this. Yeah. You should solve this on your own.
Listen, I know I'm the one who requested to shove a coat hanger down your cast, but you should know I'm married. This is inappropriate. We're at work.
As I'm doing it, and like you have to be very close to them as you're doing it. And like, I was like, this feels weird. This is like taking a bullet out of somebody. Like this is, our relationship will be different after I do this. So I ceased it. But man, those were all the things I was worried about with this cast. And I was worried that my fingers were going to continue to be immobilized. But like when I got this cast, I was so pumped in a way that I don't think the doctor was surprised by, because he hadn't seen, generally people get a cast, they're like, fuck, that's 6 months. I'm not 6 months, 6 weeks. But I was like giddy. I was so excited when I got this. And he was like, hey, are you sure you're going to keep this thing on? Right. And I was like, yeah. It's just, you don't understand. I thought things were going to be so much worse. And now I'm just like replanning the rest of my summer, because I thought I was doomed.
Yeah. Well, that's good. I'm still, it sucks you're going through this, man. Broken wrist is a no joke, painful ordeal that even if you're done with the cast, it's still, rehab lasts longer than you want it to, and it'll be a real while until it all like feels, until you're not thinking about it anymore. But it sounds like you got a good head on your shoulders about it.
Yeah, things are fine. I'm carrying a sign around. I'm doing okay. It's just can't tie shoes or touch my, can't pinch anybody right now.
Well, that's probably good.
You don't want me pinching people? Why?
Yeah, I think that's has been a problem for a while, and it's not technically illegal, so none of us knew what to do about it, and none of us wanted to immobilize you, but, you know, with enough prayer, these things sort of course correct.
Which you would have been doing had you not broken your own wrist.
That's
before
right.
church. I don't know. I feel like I'm going to heal fast. I've sort of like told myself I'm going to heal fast.
Yeah.
Like it's the secret or something. And I have no idea if that will actually happen. I have to go in for x-rays again soon. And they're going to tell me whether it's healing properly. Again, the circulation for this bone sucks. So like there's a good chance that maybe it just won't. And then I have to have the screw and then I'm back. Kind of like where you were, where it's like, mm-hmm. oh, good. I just sat in this cast for nothing for a while. Now I've got to have surgery.
Yeah.
But we'll see. I'll keep posted.
It is. It's a, if your doctors were anything like mine, it's a ridiculous process where they did the surgery and they put a metal plate and a bunch of, I think 12 screws in my wrist that are just in there forever now.
Oh, and so many.
The doctor was like, you'll be good now. You'll be great. This is going to be your wrist and it's going to take some rehab work, but you know, you're going to recover and it'll be good as new. But you know, if years from now, your thumb starts to feel weird, come back in immediately because, and yeah. we'll need to take it out because otherwise you'll lose your thumb. Like, well, I'm in my 30s. My different parts of my body feel weird all the time, man. What do you mean? Everything always yeah. hurts.
Yeah. When they were describing if the bone is displaced even the slightest bit or there's a gap at all between the break, it's going to heal improperly. And I was like, well, tell me what that means. Tell me like end game, like what yeah. in my own real world application, how is that changing things? And they're like, well, you'll have less mobility. If you're an athlete, it would be a big problem. And also you're pretty much guaranteed to get arthritis. And I was like, when? Yeah. It's like, I don't know, 75. I'm like, good. I wasn't planning on living that long. Right. That's great. That's great. Okay. I'm back to being excited again, Doc. But I was emotionally, I was in some very strange places in Colorado as well. And so I was like, as soon as I was in the doctor's office, I hadn't even been seen by him yet. I'm seeing other like children come out with casts on. They can't be trusted apparently with these ratchet casts because they won't wear them.
No, absolutely not.
And they'll just lose them. And so as kids are coming out with their own breaks, they'll look very similar to mine. They're coming out in casts that are like these electric colors. And I'm in my brain going, maybe I just get a hot pink cast. That'll be weird. That's a cool thing for me to do. And it's so great that I didn't end up doing that. I was not in any position to be making a decision that big while I was there.
It was, for the brief time that I was in like a full arm cast, it was very frustrating to get dressed in general. Separate from that, I was like, well, I've got this full arm black cast and I'm not going to dress as if I don't have black on me. And that just limits my options for what I can wear. Like it's completely. A really dumb consideration. I was like, no, I can't. That's going to clash.
You can't do brown on black.
No, wrap brown on black.
I did get very worried immediately after I found out it was broken about Michael's wedding, which we're both going to, because a cast, you cannot hide under a blazer. Like there's no, you have to like, you're in one of those weird situations where it's pushed up like you're in the 80s on one side and just sitting on top of the cast in a very uncomfortable way. Cause there's no stretch to those worsted wool suits.
And if you did one of those things where like your left arm was in the sleeve and your right arm was just down and the jacket was draped over it, everyone who was looking at you in like the audience for whatever that term is, they'd just be thinking like, hey, honey, do you think he's missing an arm? What do you think is going on
no
over
arm.
There?
Is
he no arm? Okay. What do you think? Like, look at him. Like farming? You think farming accident? Farming? I'm going to ask him. I'm just going to fucking ask him as soon as this is done.
There's no one's listening to the vows. You are now the center of attention, guaranteed. But because I can remove this, I can basically take it off, put on my suit, and then put this on within the sleeve. And it's just so excited about that. Oh, the doctor had never seen somebody so overjoyed to be in a fucking cast. It was great.
Anyway. I love every thought process of that. Being at this new doctor in Colorado and be like, hey, this cast is great. It's so fun. Is this going to interfere? I have a lot of questions. Is this going to interfere with, like, I don't want to steal a lot of attention from my buddy's wedding. Like, what?
Good. Yeah, guy, just heal, man.
Most people ask, how do I sleep?
I sat with this doctor for so long, just asking questions. And after about like 15, I was like, I mean, I'm really sorry for doing this. Like, no, it's great. No one ever asked these.
Oh, good.
And so I felt really good. And then I was like, maybe too much after that. But yeah. I was asking questions like, okay, if I can, when I take it off, what is like my limitation in terms of like pinching my fingers together? He's like, I would never do more than a pound. And I'm like, that's fine. Should I be running with the cast on or off? And he's like, what? Well, don't, maybe just don't run with it. And I was like, on or off, doc? Like, what's it going to be?
But I'm training for American Ninja Warrior.
I'm going to run. I'll tell you what, I'm going to run with it on. And he's like, I think you should do that. Please don't trail run. And I was like, no, I won't be doing that. I was like, I don't fall a lot. I've got a pretty good track record.
Jesus.
And asking just like a thousand questions, because I know that there's going to be along the way, I've had enough injuries where like, I've been in a doctor's office. They're like, no questions. Good. See you later. And then I'm home and I'm like, oh shit, I don't actually know how to live my life.
Yeah.
I have a lot more things I should have asked. Can I swim with it? Can I go in the shower with it? Can I do anything? And when will I be able to put weight on it again? Like all of this stuff. Anyway, it's of all things, all the ways it could have gone, having like a scraped up helmet and a broken wrist certainly. Is certainly not the worst.
How's your bike?
Fucked. the fucked in a way that I think is fixable, though, where I can't ride it now, obviously, but as I rode it home that day from picketing, I realized that one side where the brakes and the gears are, you know, it sits like right on the handlebar, that's pushed way down. Like if you can't even grab it anymore, because it just got dragged along the ground, and the tops of both on both sides where the gear shifts are, and it gives you that little number of what gear you're on, scraped to the point where you can't actually read anything on it anymore. It's just like shaved. I think with a rubber mallet, I could fix that first problem. But other than that, I'm just sort of like, I'm just going to have to feel it from now on. I'm going to have to be one with the bike to know what gear I'm in.
Or get a new bike.
Oh, I guess that's an option. Yeah. See, the thing, I'm not really getting paid right now.
Oh, that's true. That's very fair.
Spent a lot of money on this new cast. Kind of got my own things going on. I'm really hoping that at some point I have like, it's been deeply frustrating with working out that I can't work out at all. And that I can run and that's basic and do some sit-ups and that's basically it.
I think it's very admirable that you are even doing it. When mine was broken, even when I was out of the cast and stuff, but I was still in like the removable cast, I gave myself, first of all, I was just like, it's so depressing to not be able to do a thing that you used to be able to do, that it was very frustrating and demoralizing to even try to work out. And separate from depression was just like, I can kind of give myself a pass from not working out right now. And it's really impressive and admirable that you are still like trying to do it. Because I was like, well, I've got a broken wrist, so I guess I won't work out, run, read books, cook, clean up after myself.
I'm doing it because I'm afraid that without it, I'm just going to get to a really dark place. Cause you work so hard, you and I, you know, to become a runner, to become like getting into a good workout routine, it takes so much effort and to get it right. And then finally, like my body showing the rewards of like the fruits of that. And I was like excited about it. And here's this thing where I'm like, you're not allowed to work out again for 2 months.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, fuck. Yeah. I was so close. Like I had this thing. And so now I'm trying to do anything that I can to try and maintain.
I think about that at this point, at this age, and the amount that I've put into running, I think about that all the time, almost every time that I run, that, which is every day, that if I did fall or get into some kind of accident that broke a leg or broke an ankle or something that, and a doctor was like, you just can't run for X amount of months, I'd be like, man, shoot me up with whatever fucking shit you used to give those shaky actresses so they could stand on their feet in like the 1930s movies. Just give me, put something in me for me to not know what's going on, because I can't lose a month I can't stop running, man. I gotta keep doing it.
You show him that scene from Baz Luhrmann's Elvis where he's like, whatever it takes.
Whatever it takes.
Give me that. Whatever that doctor's like, juicing it with.
All right, this is cocaine and Adderall and some toothpaste. We don't know what it does yet. We're just going to just keep fucking shoving. This is Gak. You remember Gak from Nickelodeon? That's in there too now. Oh, he's up. Okay, good. Yeah, give me that.
Just having a cast, and even though I don't have it bad at all, it makes me think back to in school when you'd like a kid would show up one day with a cast that was attached to like a piece of wood coming off their hip to like keep their arm up at a certain distance from their body, and how terrible that must have been for them at the time. I was just like, he's got a cast on. That's just how he is. For him, that kid and his family, like, life was just miserable for 2 weeks. Yeah. I don't even know how you get shirts on and off.
I actually wonder how, when you mentioned that the kids can't be trusted with the removable casts, that makes me question if this removable cast technology is less modern than I think it is, because my understanding of casts was the same as you, like seeing kids in school growing up. And my brother Tommy broke his arm when he was like 14 or 15, and he had like a serious cast for a very long time. And it does make sense that these casts were so serious because kids really couldn't be trusted. You really need to like force their body into a position or they would never heal properly. And I don't know. I'm just very curious if like it's the same as like putting one of those fucking cones on a dog's head after surgery, which is like, no, you can't give a 13-year-old kid the freedom to remove his cast. He'll take it off and then destroy it.
Yeah. I mean, it's possible they've been around for a while. This was the first I'd heard of them. And I also thought for a minute that this was specific to Colorado. What like a home team favorite I am. Like where I thought like they had invented it. I was like, yeah, surely with all the ski pole accidents, like they just were like, this is untenable. Let's come up with a new technology.
Yeah.
And let's not share it with anyone just yet. So, right. But no, I think these are everywhere.
And this strange Ayn Randian John Galt world of Colorado where all the greatest specialists come together in a little bubble.
I'm just saying, it's never been a better time to break your bone right now. I mean, it's so good. Yeah. We've never had it so good.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, Dan, I think we're out of time.
We are out of time. I had so many more questions, but I guess we'll just have to keep doing the show
next time.
Yeah.
It's not like the pickets will be over. It's not like I'll be healed by the next show. So yeah, I think we're going to be fine.
And also like now knowing that all of your stuff was about a broken bone, I'm looking through my list of questions about one of them is about bow ties and one of them is about going to a doctor and everything being fine. So I'm glad that we could put some time between your thing and my thing.
There's a thing that I definitely want to talk to you about next time, which is as soon as you start doing your intro, you had a different sound in your apartment because you live somewhere brand new and I can hear it.
What is the different sound? Is it a weird echo?
No, it's just different. I can tell that the room is different.
Ooh.
Yeah. All right. We'll talk about that next time.
Yeah.
You've been listening to Quick Question.
Listeners, that's a real teaser for next week.
We're going to describe Daniel's apartment.
Yeah.
So stick around. You can follow Daniel on Twitter at @DOB_Inc. or me, Soren_LTD, as long as we're still there. You know, we're both on... Actually, are you on Blue Sky yet?
No. I'm not interested in joining another thing.
Well, are you admirable, on it? I guess. Yeah, I'm on it.
Cool. Send me an invite.
I'm over there. Look, I got to earn it first, it turns out. I got to be there for like a month or two before I'm allowed to send the invites. But you will get my first one. You can also follow a Quick Question at @QQ_Soren and Dan. We have an email, which is QQ@SorenandDaniel@gmail.com. We have a sound engineer, an editor, producer in Gabe Harder. You can't find him anywhere, but GabeHarder.com is a website. You can also find us on Patreon at patreon.com/quickquestion. Our theme song is by Me Rex, and you can find their music at merex.bandcamp.com or wherever you listen to your music. That's it.
Solidarity.
Solidarity. Bye.
I've got a quick question for you, all right? I want to hear your thoughts, I want to know what's on your mind. I've got a quick question for you, all right? The answer's not important. doctor's bar that we could talk tonight. So what's your favorite? How did you get? Find it. I think you'll have a great time, yeah.